इत्युक्तस्थं परिक्रम्य प्रणम्य च निपावकः ययौ मधुवनं पुण्यम् हरेश्चरणचर्चितम् इति thus उक्तः being spoken तं him Narada Muni Parikramya by circumambulating Panamya by offering obeisances Cha also Nipa Arbakaha the boy of the king Yayao went to Madhuvanam a forest in Vrindavan known as Madhuban. Punyam, which is auspicious and pious. Harehe, of the Lord. Charanacharchitam, imprinted by the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Translation, and there is no purport. Next few verses have no purports. We may read, I think, three verses today. So bear in mind whoever's writing up the verse, and tomorrow we may not be going in, maybe 65 or something, we'll see. So the translation of this verse is, when Dhruva Maharaj, the son of the king, was thus advised by the great sage Narada, he circumambulated Narada, his spiritual master, and offered him respectful obeisances. Then he started for Madhuvan, which is always imprinted with lotus footprints of Lord Krishna, and which is therefore especially auspicious. The next verse, 63. Tapovanam gate tasmin pravishtam tapuram munihi Artitarhanako Yuragya Sukhasina Uvachatam. After Dhruva entered Madhuvan forest to execute devotional service, the great sage Narada thought it wise to go to the king to see how he was faring within the palace. When Narada Muni approached the king, received him properly, offering him due respect, due obeisances. After being seated comfortably, Narada began to speak. So the story, of course, some of you are very familiar with, how Dhruva Maharaj, for various circumstantial reasons, became very determined to obtain a kingdom greater than his great-grandfather. And by the indication of his mother, the Suniti, he went to the forest to search out whom his mother said may be able to fulfill your desire. Whoever God is, you go to the forest, you may find God in the forest. So he went to the forest searching for God. He didn't really know quite exactly who this Vishnu or God is. But he was so determined, of course, it's not normal circumstances. These are all exceptionally special personalities involved here. But by the arrangement of the Lord Narada Muni, appeared before him and gave him good advice. His first good advice was, go back home with mum and dad. You're a young boy, this is not the right thing for you to do. They've realized their mistake now, at least your father has. And if you go back there, you know, it's not good to do to be like this. You go back home now, everything will be okay. But he was determined, he didn't listen to Narada Muni. He indirectly said, if you want to go home, you can go home, but I'm not going home. I've got my purpose for coming here, and I'm not going to leave here until I fulfill it. He was very Kshatriya blood, very determined. Once they have something in their minds, they aim for it. They're very determined. We could learn a little lesson there in our own. We could take efforts to become devotees That determination of Dhruva Maharaj was basically unflinching, even though it was based, you could say, on a materialistic objective. Still, nonetheless, the determination was very great. Lessons we can learn. Prabhupada says the same thing sometimes. People in the material world, some of them are very, very determined, although they may have other activities going on, businessmen, politicians, sometimes even, you know, special persons like sportsmen, or whatever they may be, musicians, students, scientists. They're very, very, you know, determined to focus on their goal, because it has a temporary effect, but still, for the time being, they're very focused. And devotees, we can learn, probably, so we can learn from that. We heard yesterday about being engaged 24 hours a day. We see this sometimes I haven't personally, you know, had association, but I know that some people who are in positions of power or very important, they're 24 hours practically focused on their objectives. I mean, the famous Margaret Thatcher, the Iron Lady of England, Prime Minister of England, she was sleeping maybe maximum 2 or 3 hours a day. She was so focused on what she was doing. And I met people like this. I'm sure you all have. Some of you may be like this. You're so, when you have that focus, nothing, you don't want to do anything else. Sometimes in a marathon, for instance, if you know what that is, in December, traditionally in ISKCON, the members of the society would have what we call the Prabhupada Book Marathon. And let's go back to the 70s, for instance, when it was mainly brahmacharis, brahmacharinis, young men and women. Of course, we're in a different situation to most of you who are grihasthas, working people, and so on. But still, the principle is the same. They were on the marathons. You couldn't sleep or eat at the last few days. Literally speaking, it was like almost impossible to eat and sleep. I mean, you start putting a date in your mouth, and immediately you see somebody, you put it down and run out for them to just do the book. Maybe with the date still in the mouth. You know. We couldn't eat in the middle of winter, icy, freezing cold weather, and the maximum you could eat would be a cup of cold milk and a bag of dates or something, a whole day, and that would be it, you know, in between things. You didn't feel it. Robert said it was samadhi, it was full absorption. He described it like that. He said, this mood of the devotees on Sankirtan actually means you're in samadhi, full absorption. Samadhi is 100% absorption. Of course, the absorption of Dhruva Maharaj in attaining his objective goal, or that of the businessman, or whatever it may be, Stephen Hawking, whoever it may be, scientist, is for the wrong purpose. But the principle is just misusing the energy of the Lord. But a lesson can be learned there, determination. So Dhruva Maharaj had that determination. Now he entered into the forest. Eventually Narada Muni gave him instructions. You see in this boy, he was testing him. He's very determined. He is not, you know, he's not just a kind of like a temporary, just a fad. You know, sometimes parents say, oh, it's just a fad, don't worry, he'll be okay tomorrow. You know, you get the kids, many of you have kids or have kids. And sometimes, you know, they get upset about something and they say, I don't get it, you know. And you know, tomorrow they'll forget about it. And they'll forget about it altogether and something else will be on their agenda. So you don't take it seriously. So he's testing to see how serious the boy is. That's another thing that in this case is Narada Muni, the spiritual master. Even the Bhagavatam, we see Shukadeva Goswami testing Maharaj Parikshit. End of the fifth canto, the hellish planetary systems are described and this and that. So out of natural compassion, Parikshit Maharaj was asking, how are people going to become relieved from this? So then Shukadeva Goswami explains that, you know, by atonement, prayaschita, you know, by doing a materially good act, you can counteract all these. So, Parikshit Maharaj thought, what is this? This is not going to work. He didn't accept it. He questioned his spiritual master. Said, this is not going to work. And, you know, he had his doubts about the answer which Shukadeva Goswami gave. And then Goswami gave another answer, that doing this with knowledge of the, say, the way things work and so on and so forth, still he wasn't satisfied. And eventually only when he came to the conclusion that devotional service or spiritual activity alone, because only spiritual activity will remove the actual problem, the actual root cause the root cause which causes people to suffer in this material world, which causes people to aspire for that little drop of nectar which keeps us going, the hope, the idea that I will find satisfaction if I keep trying in the material world, which drives us on. This is Maya's carrot in front of our nose, tempting us all, keep going, keep going, you'll make it, and no one else made it, but you will. Keep trying, don't worry. It's like this incentive or this driving force is there, more or less, by the arrangement of Maya, in everyone's lives up to a certain point. Sometimes it just gets beyond the point. But in principle, it's always there. We've got to make it, we've got to make it, we've got to succeed. Same with Dhruva Maharaj. I've got to get it. He wasn't going to turn back. So, anyway, Maharaj Pariksit passed the test. Sukadeva Goswami was happy. You have to pass tests. Maya, Prabhupada describes, her business is to test the devotee, to see. Not just, hoping it will fail. It's not that Krishna's keep putting tests in there. Make sure that eventually you're going to fail. And I don't have to worry about you anymore. I don't have to have your association in the spiritual world, thank God. Not like that. It's a test, what for? So to be completely free of anything else. Free, free. Totally free. Just like we saw, we discussed the other day, it wasn't here, we were discussing the pastimes in Bhagavad Gita, we were reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, I think. The pastimes of Pariksit, King Prataparudra, how determined he was to obtain his goal. Now, his goal is a little different, right? What was his goal? Was his goal to be a kingdom, conquer the world? I want to be the king of the whole world and beyond. He was the king of Orissa, not just South India, but was that his goal? No. His goal, what was his goal? To see the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya, to have the very personal association, the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he was willing to give up anything for that. His kingdom, his life, everything. He was so determined. He tried everything. He appealed to the devotees. He appealed to Lord Nityananda. He appealed to his Harvabhoma Bhattacharya, Ramananda Roy. Please, help. I can't exist unless I get this opportunity. And Lord Chaitanya was testing him and showing us an example. That those tests may be there. And in our case, it may not be so profound test in the sense of very, defined. It's just a constant, ongoing mental, disturbance, social disturbances, family issues, other aspirations, so many things. Devotees, the devotees are often the greatest test. It's in the association of devotees only that we can cultivate Krishna consciousness. But Krishna tests us through the devotees. We shouldn't think, oh dear. We get up. I'm never going to go to the temple again. And the devotee said something to me. Never. At least I won't go if he's there or she's there. And sometimes, it's childlike, just like your kids. It's exactly like a kid. Exactly. The kids are being, in a sense, they're part of maturing. But the tests are there. The tests are there not to try to stop them, but to try to strengthen them. To try to prepare us. To try to prepare us. We can't enter into the spiritual kingdom as easily as that. Isn't it? Oh, where are you going? Are you going to Vrindavan this year, Prabhu? Oh, yes. I've got my tickets. I've already booked into the MVT. I'm on my way. And, we've got lots of money for spending there on all sorts of nice things to bring back. Not as easy as that, of course. That's also, again, a very good fortune. We can do that, and by the mercy of Prabhupada, we're able to get the association of the Dharma a little bit. The more we hear from those who are actually nivritta-tarshya, those who are free of all material motivation, then the more we can actually begin to appreciate the real nature of the Dharma. It's not just a place you go for a holiday or have a bit of fun. Or whatever. Of course, you don't do that, I know. But I mean, some people, maybe they go there for, maybe not just have a bit of fun. We hope it's not that bad. But They may go there just to, you know, get relief from simple reactions or something like that, or whatever, with the hope that we're going to become, you know, further advanced in our Krishna consciousness. But the tests are often there. Even when you go to the Holy Dam, you often find tests are there, right? Certain tests. Sometimes the monkeys steal your glasses. Sometimes you get, you know, what we would say, you know, harassed by some pandas or whatever it is in Varshan or in Nandagram or in Gokul or somewhere or another, isn't it? You know, it's like, even your Indian body, they know you're not Indian, they know you're from Australia, they can read you like a book. The Australian Indians are the best ones to have to go for sometimes, because, you know, they know they've got a few rupees in their pockets. They don't want rupees, they want dollars, a few dollars in their pockets. So they're kind of not so keen on the Westerners, because the Westerners have kind of, they're kind of seasoned in this regards now. There aren't many of them there anyway. It's mostly Indian devotees now. So anyway, they can read you. And maybe if the weather, maybe the stomach sometimes gives us a test, doesn't it? Some of you may have had a, you know, Delhi belly when you go to India or something like that. You know, a few things, or maybe you get, you know, some cold or whatever it is, you know, the culture, you know, being stamped upon as you're trying to pay your obeisances in the Krishna Balaram temple during Kartik, 10,000 Rajasthani ladies trampling over you on the way towards the altar. Whatever it may be, crushed to a sardine trying to take you're taking a nice darshan of Radhasham Sundar, and all of a sudden 50,000, you know, pilgrims pour in like a tsunami, you're kind of crushed up against the stone there, you can't get out, you know, it's like, you know, you're trying to offer your lamp and some, you know, trying to push forward and with his lamp and catches your hair or something. Then you find your gold rings have all disappeared, your earrings have all disappeared. You might have a few tests there, you know. Well, many other things may be there. The mosquitoes, not so bad as it used to be. In Mayapur, there used to be, you know, as soon as the opening started, you know, the on mosquito radio, you know, the reserve forces would come in by the million to Mayapur. There's some very, very tasty white-skinned restaurants have arrived. We need at least 50 million, you know, more mosquitoes to. So many other things may take place. A little test may be there to see how determined we are. What is our motivation? So definitely, Guru Maharaj was tested. There was my said, you know, I've been chanting for so long, you know, how do I make advancement? And yesterday we had coming to a plateau, you know, it's like, what do I do? This is a test, it's a test. You know, okay. It's not all easy going, you know. If everything was easy going, that's another thing. Same in the material world. Krishna's very kind by giving us suffering. Imagine if the material world was all roses. Everything was like, would you ever want to leave? Would you ever want to change? You know, your husband was like, you know, did the dream of every girl. The wife was like, always beautiful and always submissive to the husband. The children are like angels. And whatever you say, Daddy, please, I'm your servant forevermore. And, you know, the government said, my dear citizens, whenever you have a problem, please come to me and we will satisfy all of your desires. And we're only here to serve your needs. We will make sure that there is no suffering in society. We will not tax you. And, you know, everything was nice. The weather was always nice. Everybody was nice with each other. Will we ever want to leave? You never. There was no poverty and, you know, prasad, maybe whatever it was, the food was always just what you wanted, and you had, you know, when you didn't have to work very much, you know, and you had to work with what you liked doing anyway, right? Wouldn't it be nice? There was no cancer, there was no none of these problems in society. Wouldn't it be nice?
No old age.
Huh?
No old age.
Not all what?
Old age.
Oh, no, yeah, no old age. No old age, unless you wanted it. No disease. No death. Well, even in the heavens, there is death, but you don't think of it. It's like the heavens. That's what people are wanting. That's why they're all asking to go to heaven. If they believe that sort of stuff. That's kind of a little bit what it's like. But there's always a little bit of fear. There's always a little problem, but not much. It's pretty... That's why it said in the heavenly plants, it's pretty hard to, take up pure devotional service. You may be pious. And you often find that rich people, they may have some kind of mundane piety. They may even have some sentimental religion, but it's only related to, material sentiment, basically. It's not give up, let go, give up all. And it's like that, even with King Pratapa, he had to... Although he'd already given up everything in his heart, Lord Chaitanya was just testing him to show the greatness of this devotee. And then finally, of course, he did. He gave up his, as Lord Chaitanya said, Naham vipro na chanara piti na pi vaisho na shudra naham vani na chudra piti na upanastavi kiribam. We're none of these things. So he gave up even the external designation. Lord Chaitanya's problem was really not an internal one with him, it was an external one, that he goes by the designation of king, therefore he cannot intimately associate with him. That's the problem. We go by these internal, as long as we've got these designations, oh, I'm a woman, I'm a man, I'm a this, I'm a that, then there's a barrier between us and pure devotional service. We can utilize that designation, but we shouldn't be attached to it. We shouldn't be, trying to establish it as me, as us, like that. This is the one of the tests we may fail in. I'm a Brahmin, I'm whatever it is, I'm a scholar, I'm a guru. And these are different tests. We're none of these things, Lord Chaitanya said. Of course, he's asked everyone to be a guru, but that's a different thing. It's not exactly a designation in one sense. It's a service of passing on the message which has been passed down to the parampara. It's not that we're any different or anyone's different from anyone else. It's just the degree that one passes on that message. So these various tests may be there. So if everything was just, we would never think about, So I was reading this morning a conversation with Prabhupada in Perth with this girl named Carol. And she said that. She said, isn't suffering good sometimes? Isn't it help people turn to Krishna? And Prabhupada said, yes. But they said, sometimes people don't listen. They don't take the advice what to do. Sometimes that happens. People are saying, oh God. They don't believe in God. But even sometimes they say, God help me. They're atheists. And even atheists sometimes say that. Huh? When they're really in a difficult situation. God save us. God help us. God this and that. Sometimes. What a lot of pious people at least they do. But then as soon as they're in a normal situation again, they usually, put it to the sideline again. It's not such a serious absorption, a serious endeavor. But it's meant there. The suffering in this world is meant as a positive incentive. So the challenges we have in our devotional lives are not, we shouldn't think, oh, this is a result. Sometimes we think it's a result of these devotees, is a result of the movement, is a result of Krishna consciousness. Sometimes you go to that extreme, or it's God himself. Sometimes we go to that extreme, but it's not. It's actually to help us. Otherwise, if it was all plain sailing, there wouldn't be so much of an incentive to actually surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We've got the whole aspect of Krishna consciousness is to bring us to that point of Sharanagati, or complete surrender. Not just on a conditional basis. If I'm happy, I'm in devotional practices, I'll carry on. If Krishna shows himself to me, then I'll believe it. All kinds of different conditional aspects. Okay, we can say, well, isn't that a little bit like blind faith? But in one sense, everything in the material world is blind faith, pretty much. And we have the association of pure devotees of the Lord. I'm still there. In our fortune of meeting Srila Prabhupada and so on and so forth, that is there. And it's not just blind faith. As we go along a path, for instance, if you're going along a path from here to Canberra, there will be certain signs on the road, and they will be indicated before we start. If you suddenly see a sign, Geelong, is that you pronounce it, Geelong? You know, 5 kilometres, you might realise maybe I'm on the wrong road, you know, or Bamboro or something, or the other way, Adelaide or something. You may think, maybe am I on the right road here? You're questioning. You have to question. Sure, we have to use our intelligence to question. See, what's wrong here? Am I going in the right direction or not? And the right direction might say roadworks, traffic jam, you know, dangerous corner, speed limits. There will be tests on the way. And you have to adhere to those. It is part of the test. You can read it. That there will be these challenges will be there. These already existing, you know, anartas or desires for various goals in life, material goals, they'll come before us. They may come directly in our own internal, or they may come through somebody else. And it's not that devotee or that person is like, you know, damn it, I've just got to get them out of my picture, then I'll be okay. Krishna might be teaching us something through that. He may be revealing us something. He may be testing us. And Prabhupada does describe that in many places. But when somebody puts us, what we consider anyway, into an awkward situation, we should see this as Krishna's mercy. Even if we don't understand what I'm to make of this, we should at least understand, through this person, Krishna is relieving me of some of my bad karma. Now, bad karma is not just something we hear in devotional service, clear, but it's deeper than that. When we talk about karma, it means the tendency to perform activities which lead to future entanglement within this material world. False identifications, attachments to this false identification which we have, are being challenged. They're being challenged. And because we're attached, we get affected. We get affected by it. We become disturbed instead of seeing how Krishna's hand is working. The whole essence of Krishna consciousness is to see how Krishna's hand is working, not just when things go what we perceive as well. It's only a perception, because from the soul's perspective, it's neither good nor bad. But we're still seeing it through our, you know, conditional understanding of who we are. So therefore we get affected by the reaction of whatever happens on that conditional plane. We become happy or distressed, happy likes and dislikes and so on. All these things occur. So Krishna will test us. Why? To try to remove all of these upadis, sarvupadi, vinyanoktam, to remove all the upadis or the false identifications which we have. That's how we may still, on the external platform, obviously, have to interact in a way which is appropriate, especially if there's some, you know, misbehavior or whatever. We may accept that I deserve more than this. But still, in certain cases, one has to act with intelligent common sense, but without being, you know, affected, so to speak. Without being, oh, grr, I'm going to get my own back on them if it kills me. Sometimes we feel like that. Childish mentality. I hate them. Love them. Whatever. Childish mentality. If they satisfy my condition, I like them. And if they don't, I don't. A childish mentality. So in a sense, Dhruva Maharaj was like that. But he had the good fortune, as we heard yesterday, of meeting a devotee of the Lord, a pure devotee of the Lord, who then avails of our foolishness. As he did here, devotional service. Dhruva Maharaj didn't know what devotional service was from a barge pole. He didn't know what it was. But he gave him devotional service. Chanting the names of the Lord. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Again and again and again. Chanting. Well, naturally, he wasn't doing anything else. He said, we've got to focus on this 100%. And no eating, no sleeping, not even breathing eventually, as you may well know. He stopped even breathing. Focused. When one becomes very focused on one's goal, everything else becomes, even the tests. It's like a mother. Sometimes a mother with her child, you know, in certain circumstances, even though there is some other very, maybe her leg has been cut off, Maybe she's been shot, but her whole consciousness is on the child. She doesn't even bear that in mind. The pain that she's experiencing is irrelevant. All that matters is the child. The mentality of a mother sometimes is so absorbed in goals or a lover or their beloved. There's so nothing, even though there's so many other causes of disturbance, that type of focus is there. So Dhruva Maharaj was like that, so focused on his goal. His goal wasn't pure devotional service, but he met a pure devotee who gauged him. And it's just like Prabhupada did. I don't think most of us, some of you Indian devotees may progress that far, but most of us didn't really come and think, I'm going to the temple to get pure devotional service. We don't know what it is, really. Well, maybe we still don't. I mean, we're learning. We're trying to understand what it means. Yeah. Anyavilasita ashrinyam jnana kamadinavritam. It's without any of these motivations, without any of these false identifications, without any coverings of any kind. And in the association of pure devotees, that is made possible. Made possible. As Dhruva Maharaj shows here, the determination, even if we don't know, even without our knowledge of, you know, the real objective, if we have that good fortune, that's why good fortune is the essential factor in a change of heart. Change of heart, where we're no longer seeing through these conditional eyes, these conditional perception, and judging the world accordingly. I'm American, I'm Indian, I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm a Hindu, I'm a Buddhist, I am whatever it is, all these different things, you know, I know what I'm talking about, etc. All these are false coverings. We have to see through Shastra chapters, the eye of scripture. So the pure devotees, they engage us in such a way that gradually we become purified of all these designations. We can't imitate Dhruva Maharaj and go to Madhavan standing, whatever he did on one leg or something, for just standing there chanting Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're not expected to do that, but we are given the medicine to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And the forest, the whole world. Now, if you go to Madhavan now, you won't see many trees around. There are some, but not so many. But when Dhruva Maharaj went there, it was full of trees. And it was a dangerous place. The forest is usually a dangerous place, full of you know, snakes and tigers and dangerous animals. And he's a young boy. He may not even know that. But he's, you know, again, he's not worried. He's just fixed on his goal. There are many dangers in this world. We may be harassed in so many things in different ways. Every step there's danger. The devotee has to be focused. And Krishna will protect us from all dangers. And that doesn't mean that, you know, we're not going to die, or no one's going to pester us, we're not going to get arrested. It doesn't mean that. It means we won't be disturbed by it. We'll be protected in that way, undisturbed. And Krishna wants us, the devotees want us to, they're very kind. They do it in such a way that this is, as we said in the beginning, like a trick to bring us to pure devotional service. Sometimes we resist it. Sometimes we systematically try to resist it. We get together, you know, birds of a feather flock together. We get together and we agree that, you know, we've got to defend our rights. And we try to, you know, make a bubble and protect us from these situations, etc. But eventually that will burst also. We've got to get out of that type of a collective foolishness also, and realize that we have to, you know, if we want to attain the goal, we have to accept that there will be some tests on the path, and they're for my benefit. They're good. They're good, and we help others to also be positive. And it's not just tolerate the tests. Tolerate, like some yogi, you know, under the water in the middle of winter, freezing cold water. He's determined. He will not give up. You know, not like that. It's joyful. That's the wonderful thing about Lord Chaitanya's. The tests are there, but there's also the very sweetness within it. It's very sweet. And when we take the test and take it from the point of view of Guru Shastra Sadhu, you feel great relief. It's not like, oh no, you know, how many more? One feels relieved. Relieved. And at the same time, of course, it's not just about getting relieved. It's about developing. It's about taking on more and more devotional, let's say, association. Hearing and chanting, the taste, as we hear these all instructions previously in the Bhagavatam, developing a taste for the process. It comes. One develops an attraction for hearing and chanting. It would be nice if we couldn't stop hearing and chanting. That's, in one sense, there's two things going on. The one is like dissolving that which is an obstacle, and the other is replacing it with that which is favorable. Like that are going on. The temple is the place we're really meant. We can't rubber stamp these things, but this is what to be worked towards, or to some extent is definitely going on. You come here and you get that, that refueling. It's like a tank. You go there to refuel at a petrol station. You fill the tank up. You're supposed to fill your tank up when you come to the temple. What with? Prasadam? Okay, that's good. Fill the tank with prasadam. I only go there, I eat as much as I can and take away as much as I can. It's good. If the temple authorities allow you to do it, they might get on your case after a while. Usually do, most places. Anyway, you just come here to eat. Well, you do something useful, do some service, or at least give a donation, something or other. Now, that's giving us a chance to go a bit further. It's not like trying to rebuff us. It's supposed to be a chance to go further. Because unless we give something, and you can't approach Krishna directly, we've got to go through Radharani. Radharani is the personification of devotional service. She's also the source of the goddess of all the goddesses, but the goddess of Lakshmi Devi. So when people give something, they're actually becoming more eligible to approach Krishna. You approach Krishna through Lakshmi, through Radha, through his internal energy, through his personified as Radharani. So it's for people's benefit that they give a donation. It's not for their benefit, it's for their benefit. Otherwise, you can't directly approach Krishna. It's not possible. Mercy, devotional service is Radharani. She's the personification of bhakti. So by engaging a little service, then one becomes more eligible to receive the flow of mercy from Krishna. So people may not know that, being, why are you asking me to do it? They don't realize this is mercy. They think this is no annoyance. They don't know that. Pestering me for money. It's not. It's to help release you from the material world. You think this is my money? It's not. It belongs to Krishna. It should only be used for Krishna. And if we give one penny, one cent, the floor and do something, tidy the place up, something at least. They're just coming and take, give. We're ultimately, this is a place where we eventually realize we're just here to give our very self to Radha Balabha. This is what the temple is for, to entice us, to attract us with sweet kirtan going on, prasadam, hearing Krishna Katha, and that's what's going on. And sometimes there's a little interference on the screen, but basically that's what the temple's for. And if we can realize that, to create that atmosphere which will attract the hearts of people. I remember one time I was in Vrindavan in Krishna Balaram temple at 6:30 in the evening, and kirtan was going on. Aindra Prabhu was leading kirtan. And if any of you have been there when Aindra Prabhu was there, leading kirtan at 6:30, just summertime, or summertime timing, so to speak. And the temple's packed. And there's one bus came, it was a mystery tour from Delhi to Agra, and they stopped off in Vrindavan, much to the shock of the German businessmen who were on board the bus. And they parked right in front of Krishna Balaram temple. Maybe they couldn't get any further because of the traffic jam, I don't know. But they came, they were probably horrified by the scene which they were experiencing. They couldn't even cross the road practically. You know, how the cars are, they're like that far apart from each other, They're going to climb over the bonnets to cross the road, basically. Unbelievable. And they're already six wide on a one-lane road. And then a bunch of German businessmen got out the bus, and some of them, when they thought what they were supposed to do, went back into the bus again. And some of them went into the temple, came in, and a group of them came into the Krishna Balaram temple. It's not easy to enter Vrindavan now, some of them weren't quite ready. So they came into the temple, and I was watching them, and the kirtan was going on, very powerful kirtan. Some of them looked kind of, they were just kind of looking. I went to talk to them, intelligent, spoke English and so on, of course. And then I said, "What do you think of this?" And one of them said, "It's the most amazing thing I've heard in my life. I've never experienced anything like this before." He said, "I've heard, you know, I've been to many churches, I've heard all kinds of, you know, Philharmonic orchestra music, I'm into music and like that, but I've never heard anything which penetrates the heart quite like this." He says, "Woo," he says, "it's gone right into my inner heart. I don't know what it is, but it's very powerful." It affected him. It had a very powerful effect. When the kirtan is pure, when the kirtan is strongly pure, it's not based on our conception, it's not based upon our conditioning, it's not based upon trying to attract other people even. It's simply based upon, you know, service to the holy name. Full absorption, 100% absorption in service to the name. Everything serves that purpose. Name, form, whatever, fully absorbed like that. And that's the intention of this movement. That was Srila Prabhupada, what he brought to the world, and that's what he is. 100% absorbed. And in his association it picks up. And for instance, when I first came to the temple in 71, the whole temple we were, because there were some very old devotees in the temple, some of the devotees had been in the movement 6 months. They were considered old devotees. Literally, you know, relative perception. It's like a child. If a child's 4 years old, a child that's 5 years old is kind of old, you know. They look up, oh, he's five, you know. So they've been in the movement 6 months, it's like that. This. And if a devotee's been in the movement 3 years, 5 years now, they're not initiated. He's just a bhakta. They're just bhaktas. They can't do that. He's just a bhakta. Now, bhakta after 3 months meant you had to give Bhagavatam class. It was like, and you had to lead the kirtan, and take the Sangatam party out, things like that. But now it's kind of like, you know, you never think like that. It's been a movement 30 years and you haven't even given a class in some cases. Okay, not everyone's cut out for that's okay. But the whole mood was like, you know, we were simple, it was maybe very simple, but and very unusual, some of them. But the whole atmosphere was like very simple, very simple, not complicated. And there weren't many activities. The main activities were the temple program, because only those were really old devotees who happened to be initiated were on the altar. You know, the deity worship was very sophisticated. It took about 35 minutes to do the deity worship in the morning of Radhalandeshwar. And Jagannath got dressed once a week. They were sitting up, Jagannath, big days of Jagannath, bam, takes the bathroom. Didn't take long. Prabhupada said, we would sit an hour and a half chanting japa in front of the deities every morning. It was really nice. 6 classes a day in the temple. There was no need of bhakti shastri and so on because the temple was, that was what it was. Every book, teachings of Lord Chaitanya, was, nobody had books, there was only one copy of each. If you didn't come, you never heard about it. Isha Upanishad, Nectar Devotion, teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and song book. Every day. Anything from 15 to 45 minute classes on each one. And then after that, Krishna book reading at night, before going to bed. That was it. And during the day, what else do? You just kind of sit around eating and sleeping. No, minimum 8 hours a day on the street doing Harinam. Minimum. Wasn't much time left. The morning program was, you know, 4:30 to 8:30, that's 4 hours. Evening program was 6:30, depending, varied a little bit. Usually 6:30 through to 9:15. It's almost 3 hours. So that's 7 hours just on the sadhana program in the temple with the devotees. Now you can do it. You're working people, you're grihasvan, just giving an example. Full absorption. We were fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, exactly. You were in an atmosphere which meant you were absorbed. No choice, maybe you wouldn't stay. And then, after that, everybody cleaned the temple, including the temple president. There was nothing else to do. They didn't have all the management they have to do now. It's very simple. There were no other programs. And then after that, usually we do it before breakfast, 8:30 to 9, then 9 o'clock breakfast, 9:30 out on the street, till 1 o'clock, 1:30. Then lunch would come to us in the park, usually, or we'd go up and down the road back to lunch. And then again, 2 o'clock, 2:30, back out on Harinam again, till 6 o'clock. And then 7, 8 hours a day like that on Harinam. Sometimes later, if it was late night, we would sometimes miss the evening program, go on, carry on. But generally 7 or 8 hours like that on Harinam Sankirtan. And Prasadam was there. And that was it. That was the temple. And while we're cleaning, everyone was chanting Hare Krishna. Singing the whole temple. There was kirtan going throughout the whole temple. And there wasn't anything much else going on. There was no time for gossip, idle talk, and Facebook, footbook, whatever you do these days. All these things you do. You know, can't get off the flaming mobile for a moment, practically. Even during class, you know, even during kirtan, even during Rathayatra, the flipping mobile's still there preaching to us. Of course, it can be used, it really is essential. It can be used in devotional service, but we have to be careful that we're not used by it. Use it. It's a very valuable tool. Prabhupada definitely would, you know, encourage us to use it properly. It's almost unavoidable now. Same thing with internet. Nobody writes a snail mail anymore. Right? Huh? Who writes snail mail? Hardly anyone. You know, it's very difficult. What to do with this? They haven't put their email address on it. How can I answer this? We don't know how to write with a pen, you know. You don't write with a pen. You can't do that. You know, things are... But, you know, time's there. You utilize what the situation is, but don't be utilized by it. So that full absorption, during the marriage, is full absorption in devotional service, means what his spiritual master Narada Muni gave him, he executed it 100%. He didn't say, okay, he's not looking now, I'm going to have a cigarette. You know, get down off his one foot, go behind a tree. Where's my mobile? Quick, let me look. I must have a lot of internet by now. I've been standing there for 6 months. Jeez, 5 million letters. Oh my God. It wasn't like that, you know. This is terrible. There's no girls around here. What am I going to do? It wasn't like that, you know. It was completely absorbed. So we can't have that determination, but in an environment, create an environment which facilitates. It's not going to happen overnight. That facilitates that, so we become more and more absorbed. More and more absorbed in the medicinal environment of hearing and chanting about Krishna. The enthusiastic environment. Hey, clean the floor. Huh? Clean the floor, get out. It's not very attractive, you know. Why don't you do it? You dare challenge me? You rascal! Don't you know who I am? I'm the temple commander. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to know. You don't do that again, okay? Or you're out. It's not a very attractive way of, you know, devotional services. Nectar and bliss. Even if the mood is like that, you may not say it like that, but sometimes the mood is like that. It's not the mood of, you know, of that loving attraction, how sweet nectar. You want to share that opportunity to wash the pots with someone else or to clean the floor with someone. You want to share the pleasure of connecting with Krishna. The devotional service should be attractive. That's what attracts people. When it sees. It's not just do it or else. It's something attractive. It's the most attractive. Krishna is all attractive. The devotional service should be like that. Very, very attractive. It's like on Harinam, it's an easy one to give an example, isn't it? Everybody knows if the devotees are spaced out, grumpy,
You know, they're all demons. These people are all demons. They don't like us anyway. You know, what am I doing here? This is a waste of time. These people are all demons. I'd better go back. It's prasadam time anyway. The only thing I like about this movement. As long as they don't ask me to go to class or something like that. You know, there's attraction. People are, they're a magnet. It's a magnet, attracted. The soul is attracted. It's got to be like that. Something which attracts us, captivates us. Even the philosophy, you know, is going to be attractive in a sense. Because that's why you speak some philosophy to people who are not really, you know, able to digest it. It's like foreign language. Foreign language, completely foreign language. There's a funny one about in Spain when Brahmachari, he did a joke book, Krishna Conscious joke book, and one of the jokes was Harinam Party. There were many funny jokes. I'd give it to him, he had a very good sense of humour. One of the jokes was, you know, the devotees were on Harinam. You know, you see, maybe don't see it much now. I did see it in Melbourne a few years ago. Some Christian, they're really going for it on the, like their whole thing, you know, they're into their own thing, but nobody's interested. The whole society is just like a society of sophisticated cats and dogs. So this devotee, they stop, the kirtan's going on, and they stop, and one of the senior devotees, he'd been in the movement a long time, stands up to give a lecture, you know, 2-minute lecture to the people, and the first thing he says is, "This is a society of cats and dogs!" He's shouting. The people are walking by, "Oh, that's not for us, it's for cats and dogs." And all of a sudden, all these cats and dogs are all running up and all sat there with their tails wagging and he's shouting, "This is a society of cats and dogs!" That's what they made of it. I remember one time we had a program. This was the first public program I went to. It was in a village south of London. It was the middle of the winter. It was February 72, I think. Maybe early March, something like that. And it was the first kind of that type of public program I went on. And it was in a young Christians group. It was young Christian men's group. And they met above the pub. So we drove there. We had one old beaten up Volkswagen. I was the only one with a license in the temple. I just joined, you know. I was the only person who had a license. Everyone was driving without licenses. So they asked me to drive. So I drove this beaten up old vehicle there, but they never gave us any money because they said that for petrol, they said that they'll give you money at the program. They promised to give some money. So we went to this program, and it was quite a cold night. We were very skimpily dressed. So we went to the program, and we went in, and I was just really new. And so one of the older devotees, back to Paul, gave the lecture. He'd been in the movement since December. He spoke for about 10 minutes. I can't remember what he said. It was something very simple. 10, 15 minutes. They said, "Are there any questions?" And somebody put their hand up and said, "In the Bible it says Jesus is the way, the light, the truth, and nobody comes to me but through him, blah, blah, blah." He went on like this, you know. And so what have you got to say about that? It was kind of a challenge. It wasn't really a question. It was kind of a challenge and all that stuff. So Paul started on. There he goes. And one of the older boys had just been initiated, I won't mention his name, just got initiated, been in the movement 6 months. So he just got initiated, so he took the stand, you know, he said, he looked, there's about 30 of these young guys in the room, you know, and he said to him, he said, "Do you eat meat? You eat meat, don't you?" He kind of went like this, and he kind of, everyone looked at each other, they thought, "What's that got to do with the question?" Kind of didn't seem to have much relevance. "Do you eat meat?" And I thought, because probably didn't even know we were a vegetarian anyway, you know, it was like an irrelevant question. And so he said, "Of course I eat meat." It's like, you know, it's a normal thing that people do. I mean, "Of course we eat meat. What do you ask that for?" He said, "Do you eat meat?" And he said, "Yeah." He said, "You are as good as a pig!" He shouted at him like this. "You're just a pig!" The devotee giving a nice lecture. It was very attractive. Even I was shocked. I couldn't quite follow the train of logic going on behind here, but neither did anyone else. Everybody left. The whole 30 left the room. They got up and walked out. The only one left was the organizer, and he told us to please leave.
Just go away. And I'm not giving you any money. That was the end of the program. That was it. We went outside and we had to leave. And we had no money. We didn't have any money for petrol. We couldn't fill the tank up. We broke down all night long. We were walking up and down in the middle of nowhere, frozen to death in the countryside until the morning came. And we were able to contact the temple and someone came and bailed us out. And it wasn't a very effective. It wasn't quite the thing to do. It may be true, but it's not digestible. You know what I mean? But what was digestible were the ladders that we cooked for the program. Bhumadev Prabhu was a wonderful cook. He cooked 3 trays of ladders, 70 ladders on each tray. Fantastic. They were the best. I mean, sometimes when you taste something for the... It wasn't the first time I had ladders, but this was the first time I would say it was the best ladder I tasted. I'd had ladder a few times before that. I loved it. So I was a ladder addict. You say ladder for sadhu, but I know sadhu. Ladder for badu. But anyway, I like those ladders. And luckily enough, everyone else was outside the van when we broke down in the middle of nowhere on the way back with no petrol. And I was left in the car alone with two. There were about 6 of us. We consumed 1 tray. That was probably 60 or 70 ladders. And I was left with 2 ladders trays. And I finished off almost the entire 2 ladu trays. And they're very warm, by the way, if you're cold. Ladu does warm you up. But the butter and the chickpea flour are very heaty. I started to feel warmer and warmer as the night went on. It was a very memorable experience, I must say. The whole program, things like this stick in your mind, but then you realize two sides. Learning lessons. Kind of a test not to do it again. Anyway, I haven't repeated it since then, and I'm not intending to yet in this lifetime anyway. So the test may be there. Dhruva Maharaj had his test, and you could say he passed the test in reality. When finally the Lord came before him, he had no more desire. He completely said, "I've approached you, my Lord, looking for broken pieces of glass, considering a kingdom as great as Lord Brahma to be broken pieces of glass. But now I have achieved the most valuable jewel. I don't have any other desire whatsoever. I just want the opportunity to serve your devotees." Prahlad Maharaj had the same test. When Lord Nrisimhadev asked him, "Any boon you want?" He said, "I have nothing to ask. I simply want the opportunity to serve your devotees forever. That's all they desire." Even though the Lord could have put the whole world, the whole universe at your disposal. He didn't want it. He didn't want it. He learned his lessons. So like that, we learn our lessons and we eventually give up that which is, let's say, unfavorable to enter into Vrindavan. We said it yesterday. Vishaya chariya kabe shudahabiham kabehama herabo shri Vrindavan. We want to enter Vrindavan, then we have to let go of all these things sooner or later. Sooner or later. All these upadis and all these alternates, independent desires, seeing things independently of that, replace with loving devotional service. And that is received by the mercy of the loving devotee. Srila Prabhupada is giving us that opportunity. So try to make the temple the most that it already is. Even more attractive. So people, attracting people to Krishna consciousness, they see the 10% devotion and the purification, which should take place. At the beginning, it may be the dirty things come up and a bit of irritation is there. In due course of time, the good qualities should also be manifesting. Qualities of the Vaishnava, and that's the most attractive quality. Manifest through the devotee. That purity is the force. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Well, I didn't cover both verses. I'll give the 2. So tomorrow is 64. Tomorrow's text 64. Srila Prabhupada, any questions? Sunday today, isn't it? Day of rest. Day of rest. Yeah, we go to bed after this, right? Eat and have a big breakfast and go to bed. Is that what we do? I don't know what you all do. There's no arrest is devotional service. Otherwise, we get arrested by the material energy. Any questions? Yes, wonderful. Now, I gotta get the names right. Who is Krishna?
Krishna One.
Are you Krishna One? Krishna One. Who is Krishna One? You're Krishna One. And who is Hayagriva? Is he here today?
Yeah.
There's Hayagriva. And who is Prananath? Is he here today? Prananath not didn't come. Who's Krishna Two? Is he here today? Are you one or two? you're number two. Who's one? Are you one? You're number one. You're Krishna Das? You're also Krishna One. Krishna Two. And who's Venugopal? Is he here? Here's Venugopal. And what was your name?
Shiva.
Shiva. Lord Shiva's
here. No,
Shrivas. Huh? Shrivas. Shrivas. Oh, wow, wonderful. Shrivas Thakur is here today. So Krishna One. You won, did you? You won? Do you have a question?
My question is Bhagavad Gita is a song of God, but how do we sing it?
How do we sing the Bhagavad Gita? Well, we sing it with the mood of Arjuna. But there are many wonderful tunes of singing. Deno svin yatadehe kumaram yuvanam jara tatade antarapatir dirastatran namuyati. It's one tune. There are many tunes, beautiful tunes. Prabhupada said we could sing it on Sankirtan. We do always used to sing Ishupanishad in some verses, like especially Ishupanishad, we used to sing it. On Harinam sometimes. I don't generally do it, but I said you could. Ishavasyamidam sarvam yatkincha jagat jam jagat. Oh, you follow Jamuna's. She sings it nicely. Om purnam marah pramitam. With a nasal voice. Can't make it with a man or a woman singing. Amazing. Amazing voice. Incredible. If she's singing, we should try to imitate her on Harinam. But sing it nicely. Sing it with devotion. The real essence of singing the Gita is with devotion. With all your heart. Sing it with all your heart. In whatever way you can. And ultimately in the mood of Arjuna. He heard it, of course. Krishna sang it to him. But he heard it. He heard it with a submissive heart. So sing with a submissive heart and a devotional heart. Anything else? Any tune you like. You'll find that some of the verses, especially the 11th chapter, that you know there's a different meter. The verses are longer, so you have to change the meter a little bit. Any other questions? Another question: How do we eat prasadam? That's not difficult. Same answer, really. We have to eat it with a Krishna conscious. Krishna conscious with our hands, of course, as well. That time, in a Krishna conscious way. It's a very wonderful devotional activity, honoring prasadam. Please try to remember, I'm sure you do, to say the prayer before we honor and to respect prasadam and not just treat it like ordinary food and throw it in the bin. You may have a special bin for leftover prasadam, that's okay. Sometimes you can't eat it for whatever reason. But as much as possible, we should avoid that and try to respect prasadam. Very jolly mind, don't gossip whilst taking prasadam. Try to keep it Krishna conscious environment. Talk about something related to Krishna consciousness. If there's no reading or whatever. Anything else? Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you, Maharaj. Just wondering, Guru Maharaj, he's praying with so much determination. So in our Krishna conscious activities also, how do we develop the determination to chant and to perform activities?
Determinate. Determination is a good word. It literally means what it means. Terminate means to stop, and determine means not to stop. Determination, how not to stop. No matter what comes its way. It's like Prahlad Maharaj. any of these great devotees, even the demons, or any Kashyapu, what comes along, they don't stop. They carry on wind, rain, blizzard, snow, food, whatever it is, they carry on. They're not fair weather people. Right? We sometimes we call fair weather sun lovers or something. You know, when it's snowing, we don't go out. I had an experience just now in France. You know, Ruscio, probably, this is Ruscio, he's traveling with me. In France, we were going on a little bit. We tried to go out on the book marathon this year in Paris and other places. And he wasn't with me that day. I went traveling for 4 days with some other devotees. And we went to this place, and they said it's the coldest town, city in France. And it was the middle of December. So that day happened to be chosen by Lord Indra or somebody as a day to throw down non-stop blizzard, rain, and then it turned to sleet, and it was icy cold, and the wind was blowing. And hardly the day you go to the coldest place in France to distribute to Prabhupada's books. And we were there, and it was really, I mean, the other two gurus were just like, they just stood under a shelter and just chanted all the time. Kirtan, which was the cause of whatever success, and I was just stood in the middle of whatever people were going, coming down this wind-blown street with no shelter at all, zero shelter, none. Just a little shelter, tiny shelter, enough for two people. They were stood under there chanting. And people were coming, running to get out of the weather. And I, luckily I had my Gore-Tex coat on. I just let go and just went for it. That was just to read more Bhagavad Gita that day than any other day of the marathon, by God's grace. It was, you know, I was determined. I wasn't going to stop. You know, sometimes you get those little bursts. You know, not non-stop, and the result came. It was very interesting. But it's not like, oh, the weather's terrible. No, I'm going out in this weather. Sometimes you get the most amazing experiences using common sense that Krishna reciprocates like that. So how to develop that? Well, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that by hearing about those who have it, and that doesn't just mean hearing, it means associating with those who have determination. And he says directly, he says, by hearing about Haridas Thakur, he uses three persons, maybe four, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Haridas Thakur. It could be anybody, especially we have Srila Prabhupada. What, you know, austerities, what challenges he went through to bring Krishna consciousness to the world. And still, in a sense, the same thing is there. Hearing about them, he says, you develop three things. Determination, courage, and satisfaction. Courage also means confidence. So by hearing about them, we develop this spirit. And that also includes association. Our ability to do things in the beginning was wholly and solely based upon Srila Prabhupada's example, living example. Then it filtered through other devotees doing, you know, incredible sacrifices in the service of the Lord. And it's just contagious. It's contagious. So association, you develop determination, which is characteristic of the soul, but covered over by so many other mixtures of, you could say, experiences and motivations, different vrittis and so on, which diverts it constantly. You get determined and stop, something else comes in, you go over there like ducks. You know, you ever fed a duck? You know, you throw the food over there, there's 20 ducks come. And then you throw a piece, they all leave that and they all run over there. You know, they don't get this and they run, and then they run. They don't realize, well, if I stay here, I'm going to get all of it. It was good. They have no brains, no intelligence. So like that, you know, some traction here, and we fulfilled that one, and phew, we're over there, diverted. So that fixed determination and our goal by education, by association, practice, and so on, determined, develops. Lifestyle, that's why in our movement we have this regulated principles. Without that, they're the regulated principles of freedom. There's no question of being determined in our devotional practice. This is how very important to live a, you know, pure lifestyle. Determination, you can pray for it also to the Lord, and associate with devotees who have it. Hear about devotees who are solidly determined, fixed. And the others.
a yajna cowboy here, fixed in our determination. It's getting late. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Prema Nandi.